is the Paula Gordon Show. Bill Russell and I are honored to have Jason Berry and Gerald Renner, the co-authors of Vows of Silence, The Abuse of Power in the Papacy of John Paul II. When we went away and I was talking too much, the subject was Pope John the 23rd, who in 1963, called together Vatican II. 1961?
First sessions, yeah.
The impact of that, it wasn't just the 60s, and it was the 60s. The impact of Vatican II is still very much present as you talk about many of the things happening in the church in 2004, is it not, Gerald Renner?
Absolutely. The Second Vatican Council, among many reforms, suggests that it was the time for the lay to become more involved in the church. They defined the church as the people of God. They defined the church as more on a horizontal level as against the hierarchical picture that everybody has. The Holy Spirit talks to the Pope talks to the bishops talk to the priests talk to the people. Vatican II turned that around and said, no, we all have a responsibility for evangelism and for being part of the church. That's still being fought out, you know, 40-some years later. And I think one of the great bright spots in the whole sex abuse scandal are the numbers of Catholic reform groups that have been growing up, the Voice of the Faithful and others, the Survivors Networks and others who want a role in the decision-making of the Catholic Church. You know, ironically, the bishops are scared to death of that.
Well, and it seems that both the laity and many of the priests are now willing, still very much in the shadow of the Second Vatican Council, to say, yes, and I want to be heard on this. Your Father Doyle is one of those.
Well, Tom Doyle is really the hero of this book. He is a Dominican priest who entered the seminary in the early 1960s. In fact, his education as a young Dominican occurred as the Second Vatican Council was, in essence, the great pageant of Catholicism in the early 1960s, the idea that a church nearly 2,000 years old could undergo a period of 3 or 4 years of deep introspection. And what came out of those years was a sensibility of profound reform, the idea of lay people defined as people of God, capital P, capital G, people of God. And the mass changing from Latin to the vernacular languages, English, of course, in the case of the United States, and the many hopes and aspirations that priests and nuns had for a great step forward for the church, as Pope John the 23rd himself said, aggiornamento, the lifting of the windows to let in the modern world, the winds of change. Doesn't mean throwing out the baby with the bathwater, as we say in the South, but nonetheless, what happened under the papacy of John Paul II, and we say this with great respect for him, but nonetheless, he has been utterly reactionary to letting the church move forward in a way that allows freedom of conscience to truly become a baseline in the way the church functions. And the most glaring example of that is the rigid autocratic way he would not allow bishops in this country to oust pedophile priests. And, you know, when I was in Rome during my leg of the research, I was stunned to interview a canon lawyer. We refer to him as Father X in the book because he wanted to keep his job. But he said in the interview that as far back as 1989, when the American bishops requested the power under canon law, a change in canon law, so they could kick out child molesters, the Vatican said no, because the United States tribunal courts within the church were much too permissive, much too liberal in granting marriage annulments to divorced Catholics, to Catholics who had divorced and wanted to remarry within the church. Well, what? And I stood there in this Roman afternoon with milky sunlight coming through the window of this ancient building, and I was sort of, you know, my mouth agape, and I said, well, you know, what do marriage annulments have to do with pedophilia? And he said, well, if you don't respect the laws on one, you won't respect the laws on the other. On the other, I think it's kind of a disconnect. Didn't add up to me.
Sex is in both.
Well, yes, sex is in both. But I think the real problem is sexual segregation. This is a power structure of unmarried men who have not walked the rug at 3 a.m. holding that baby at the shoulder who has colic, as Jerry Renner has done, as I have done, as so many other people have done. I'm not saying I should be a priest or bishop, but I think if married men were allowed to become ministers in the Catholic Church, it would go a long way toward rejuvenating the priesthood. Whether that will happen, we don't know, but I think this Pope has certainly been anything but sympathetic to the need for structural reform.
On the subject of governance and the hierarchy and how this operates, I found myself thinking of Father Doyle and in most other power structures, particularly an absolute monarchy, he wouldn't have survived. And yet he was able to remain a priest, to remain in more or less good standing in the church.
Left one part of the church to be in another, but wasn't thrown out.
But, it's still a functioning member of the community and of the priesthood.
He's still a recognized priest, but he had to get out from under the immediate hierarchy when he joined the Air Force. And that gave him the freedom to testify on behalf of many, many plaintiffs, and he was an expert witness against the church. Which made him a pariah, in the eyes of the hierarchy.
I think also it's important to underscore here that Tom Doyle was the canon lawyer in the Vatican Embassy in the early 1980s. He saw the problem in the United States before anyone else did, really. He co-authored a pioneering report, almost 100 pages, warning the American bishops and the Vatican, if you don't forge a policy to get rid of these kinds of men, it is going to be a disaster. He was prophetic in that way, and they fired him. And so he joined the Air Force, got into a different sort of line of command, but remained a priest and has done amazing damage to the church by testifying against his former colleagues in the hierarchy.
And time and again stands with the survivors saying, I am so sorry for what the church has done.
You said damage to the church. I don't think you mean that.
I mean damage to the political sensibility of the hierarchy, the idea that we are above the law.
And the question is, what is the church? And I found myself reading this, trying to figure out, and this goes back to Vatican II and the whole history of the church, going back almost 2,000 years.
And Jesus saying, where two of us are gathered, there am I, I remember.
And it seems to be a core question. Who or what is the church?
One of the basic problems historically has been the further centralization of the Catholic Church. The first 1,000 years was nothing in the governance like it is now. And this Pope and recent popes have assumed more and more authority and power over what happens in the church. And I think that's a bad thing. There needs to be further decentralization.
At the risk of using a fully loaded word, it's almost as if this Pope, John Paul II, has instituted a counter-reformation in response to Vatican II.
I think so. I think what's happening basically, a lot of the fault lines in the Catholic Church today have happened as the losers of the Second Vatican Council have regained more and more power and are reversing what the Council did.
It's interesting that the term many of these Orthodox intellectuals use is Catholic Restoration. And of course, what they're about is the restoration of constituted authority that Vatican II, in many minds, began to undercut. Look, every institution, every society needs solid authority, but it must be just authority.
You also are really gracious in saying of Pope John Paul II that he came out of a particular time standing up to a communist challenge and working his way through and has become known as a champion of human rights. And yet, for all that you are very nice about that, and yet there's this blind spot that has to do with the authority of the Pope, and he are it.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that myopia sort of calls to mind the hubris of kings in Shakespearean tragedy, that there is a blind spot. And in his worldview, I believe, or if you will, from his prison, Celibacy is
prison?
All prism, his prism, the way he sees the world. I think it's fair to say that that Pope John Paul sees celibacy as a kind of, in an almost romantic way, as a form of chivalry, of great sacrifice. And certainly many, many priests may conceive of it that way. But at the same time, he has been utterly unable to look at the sexual behavior patterns within clerical life that have rocked the church almost to its foundations.
This gentlemen, before we continue, let me go quickly to a break. All three of you want to speak. This is the Paula Gordon Show. Jason Berry, Gerald Renner, Bill Russell. We'll all talk at once when we come back in a moment.